Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Life and Art from FT Weekend. I'm Lila Raptopoulos, and this is the fourth and final episode of our special series on design. Design is everywhere, but these days it feels like the word brand is inescapable. We chat with brands in the comment sections of TikTok videos. We see celebrities launching perfumes and new tequilas. We're even being pushed to develop personal brands for ourselves. It can be a lot. Someone who has thought deeply about this is my guest today, Debbie Millman. Debbie is a legend. She's a designer and a teacher. She's chair of the Masters in Branding program at the School of Visual Arts, and she led a branding consultancy for 20 years. Debbie also created the first ever podcast about design 19 years ago. It's called Design Matters, and it's now an institution with more than 500 interviews with creative people. Debbie's here with me today to talk about how design impacts all aspects of our lives. Debbie, hi. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. It's really wonderful to be here.
Your show has had a real influence on so many people, and it's helped them see the world around them a little clearer. It's encouraged a lot of people to even pursue careers in design. And I'd love to start just by asking, what did that for you? Like, what kind of pushed you towards branding and design in the first place?
Desperation. I went to college and got a degree in English literature and a minor in Russian literature. And so the job prospects coming out of college were not as inviting as you might think. I did have a skill, though, and that was doing what is now considered to be old school layout and paste up on a drafting table, because I worked at my student newspaper, and all of the editors of the student newspaper were responsible to also put the paper together. And so that was my one marketable skill I could put on my resume and have people take me seriously as a job prospect in some discipline or another.
So desperation is what led you to it. When did it start to sort of excite you?
Well, it always excited me in that I have always been fascinated by culture, and design in many ways helps create a foundation for culture. And it's a highly creative endeavor. And so I've always been deeply, deeply interested in the discipline, but didn't feel like I had anything important to contribute to it for many decades. And that made for some difficulties.
There's something actually heartening to hear that it was that many years that felt like floundering.
Oh my God, floundering would have been nice. It was just outright face down on the floor in depression and rejection.
Yeah, yeah. I would love to back up a little just to ask some like pretty basic questions, so forgive them, but just so that it sets a scene to help inform the rest of our conversation about design and brand. In the broadest terms, what is a brand to you?
A brand is what I consider to be meaning manufactured. It's a process of manufacturing meaning through some type of man-made device, a symbol, a word mark, any type of representation that stands for something else. Brands don't grow on trees. Humans create brands. We're the only species on the planet that use our imagination to construct meaning that we then embed in some object or thing or person.
Right. So what would be an early example of that?
So for example, 2024 years ago, we as a human species, experienced an event that led to the creation of a very specific set of beliefs about a higher power. The belief came first, but humans are pack animals. We like to feel safe and secure with other people that believe the same things we do. And so we develop a shorthand to signify that safety. And those beliefs then were represented by a symbol.
Right.
The symbol, of course, I'm talking about is the crucifix.
Right.
And that then becomes the brand of Catholicism.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a place to worship. There's a symbol. There's a shorthand. There's a way of discussing things. There's a community. There's a tribe. I could say the same thing about Apple computers. There's a logo. Right. There's all sorts of ways we engage with this brand that's actually very, very similar to Catholicism.
Yeah.
It's just a completely different set of beliefs.
Yeah. I never thought about the cross as an early brand. Great, very effective.
Well, all of our early symbols were religious.
Mm-hmm.
All of our symbols.
Right. And how do the ideas of branding and design relate to each other?
Design is actually used to build visual equity for any brand or product. And so we become accustomed to the way things look. So for example, we all know that a red curvy bottle with carbonated brown liquid in it is Coca-Cola. And so Coca-Cola has a number of design elements, or what designers might call iconic assets, that people will recognize just shown even in isolation.
Right, right. At what point did we start to talk about ourselves as personal brands? Like, when did that happen?
Yeah. I think that probably started well before the internet with the explosion of celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
But celebrity as brand, selling things, that started with endorsements and sponsorships. And, you know, I worked for a concert promotion company for many years in the 80s. And the artists that were doing that, they were accused of being sellouts when corporations were sponsoring their concerts. Now, if you don't have a sponsor, you're considered a failure.
Yeah, that's really changed.
But I do find the notion of aspiring to be a brand somewhat troubling, in that brands don't do anything without self-direction, without our directing them. Brands aren't going to behave in any way on their own. They're
brands are not sentient.
Right.
And
so if you're aspiring to be a brand, you're aspiring to have your meaning manufactured by someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you can own a brand. You can direct a brand. You can promote a brand. You can represent a brand.
Mm-hmm.
But to aspire to be a brand takes away everything that I think is most glorious about being human.
Right.
Our own imagination, our own self-direction, our ability to change our minds, our ability to, I think that if somebody is looking to build their brand, what I prefer that they think about or consider is building their reputation or building their character.
Yeah.
And then let the brand come from that.
So, Debbie, why do people love brands?
People love brands because brands help people understand reality. They help them understand where they are in the world. It could be through signage, it could be through clothing, it could be through universities or institutions, it could be through cities or countries. People understand where they are right now through the language of branding.
Right. How do you feel? I mean, I know you've worked with so many big corporate brands like Burger King and Tropicana and Kleenex. And I wonder if that made you cynical, like everyone's trying to sell me something, or sort of curious, like, you know, there's so many ways to see the world.
I don't know that it would necessarily make me cynical, but it does make me skeptical in that if you're working with a publicly traded company, that company has a fiduciary responsibility to the shareholders.
Mm.
And it's very hard to balance doing good in the world while also being responsible to your shareholders.
Yeah.
And there are very few companies that are willing to risk their stock price by doing something that might in any way jeopardize the reputation of the brand to a significant number of people.
Right, right. And can I ask if there's anything these days that you see in branding and design that you really are excited by or that you really don't like?
Well, in terms of things that I'm excited by, the world of branding through technology has changed more in the last decade and a half than it has in the last 1,000 years or maybe 10,000 years. So if you think about what we were talking about earlier, we designed symbols to be able to differentiate our beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward the 10,000 years and through the industrial era and through the technological era we're in now, brands were created for primarily profit.
Right.
And so design has been in many ways hijacked as a capitalist tool to be able to fuel branding. So what happened in 2010 is that through technology, people, non-designers, non-brand consultants, took some of that power back with the creation of movements.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw that with Livestrong. We saw that with Occupy Wall Street. Mm-hmm. We see that now with Black Lives Matter. We saw that during the Women's March. And suddenly, humans, non-professional designers or creators, took back this power to create identities and symbols to signify beliefs again and not to differentiate one product from another, one carbonated beverage from another, or one sneaker from another, but to signify beliefs. And that to me is the most exciting aspect or evolution of branding in recent times.
Yeah. Debbie, I'd love to ask you a little bit about your podcast, Design Matters, and how it teaches us to look at the world. You started it almost 20 years ago. Your guests really span. They're not just designers. They're also, even in the past few months, a magazine editor, a comedian, a stage designer for the Super Bowl halftime show, a graffiti artist. They're telling their life stories. They're very open. And I'm curious, in your mind, what the connective tissue is through all of your interviews. Do they all sort of return to a definition that you have of design in some way?
I love this question, and thank you for asking me. When I started it, it was very much centered around design, and I spoke to designers. Mm-hmm. And over the years, as I started to talk more deeply with people, I realized I was actually more fascinated by how they had constructed and designed their lives.
Mm.
How did they construct a path for becoming the artist that they are? And in many ways, the common denominator is that they're making things.
Right.
And they could be making a Super Bowl halftime show or a magazine or a product that's on a shelf somewhere or a garment or music or theater or books. It's all about what they are making from nothing, something from nothing.
Yeah.
And for me, it's about how they've designed the arc of their lives.
It's interesting to think about design in that way, that they're designing, we're designing our lives, especially people who are making things creatively. You've spoken to so many people. I wonder if you find how much of that designing feels conscious to you.
Well, in some ways, all of it. And in some ways, I'm not sure. Because in order to make something from nothing, they're risking everything.
Mm.
And where does that tenacity and resilience and belief in oneself come from? And that is, I think, something that deserves to be understood, but is also really mysterious.
Mm, yeah, yeah. Debbie, this was a real honor. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That's the show. Thank you for listening to the final episode of our special design series on life and art from FT Weekend. Take a read through the show notes. We have put links to everything mentioned today, including the podcast episodes we mentioned and links to Debbie's books. Also in the show notes are ways to stay in touch with me on email and on Instagram. I love hearing from you. Finally, there's a link and a discount code for the US FT Weekend Festival, which is happening in Washington, D.C. on Saturday, May 4th at the Reach at the Kennedy Center. Nancy Pelosi will be there with lots of other guests, and I'll be there and I would love to meet you. I'm Lila Raptopoulos, and here is my brilliant team. Katya Kumkova is our senior producer. Lulu Smith is our producer. Zach St. Louis is our contributing producer. Our sound engineers are Breen Turner and Sam Javinko, with original music by Metaphor Music. Topher Forges is our executive producer, and our global head of audio is Cheryl Brumley. Have a lovely few days, and we'll find each other again on Friday.